And turn in your Bibles to Luke chapter 13. Luke chapter 13. Last week I showed up not knowing what was going to happen as far as the worship service. And it was not what we thought was going to happen, but I heard a lot of comments afterwards that what did take place, the time that we spent in prayer together, was a real blessing for many people. And perhaps after the week that we'd had with all kinds of not good and unexpected things, it was what we needed. So I would just want to express my thanks to those who were involved in it in different ways and helping lead our time together. Luke chapter 13, the story that we're going to read begins in verse 10. But let's go into that story just with a time of quiet, and I'll invite you in that quiet to do what works best for you, whether spending it in prayer or just letting your mind come to stillness. But let's just take a moment of quiet before we read. Luke chapter 13, beginning at verse 10. This is the word of the Lord for us this morning. Now Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath, and behold, there was a woman who had had a disabling spirit for 18 years. She was bent over and could not fully straighten herself. When Jesus saw her, he called her over and said to her, "Woman, you are freed from your disability." And he laid his hands on her, and immediately she was made straight, and she glorified God. But the ruler of the synagogue, indignant because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath, said to the people, "There are 6 days in which work ought to be done. Come on those days and be healed, and not on the Sabbath day." Then the Lord answered him, "You hypocrites! Does not each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or his donkey from the manger and lead it away to water it? And ought not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan bound for 18 years, be loosed from this bond on the Sabbath day?" As he said these things, all his adversaries were put to shame, and all the people rejoiced at all the glorious things that were done by him. Now notice something in the last part of the passage. Jesus calls the synagogue leader and others who support his view hypocrites. And then you have this bit that in the last verse it says the people are rejoicing. And we have some things that are caught up together. Number one, that Jesus is healing, but also that Jesus is overturning conventions and traditions. And so there's rejoicing about, you know, these great things happening, and it's all wrapped up together. Okay, but I want to draw attention to something else, okay? That if you go back a little bit before this to the end of chapter 12, and specifically verse 56, Jesus there also tells people that they are hypocrites. But that time, it's not the religious authorities that he's talking to. He's talking to the crowd. And so he's saying it to, like, the masses, the same kind of people who in this story are rejoicing about this Sabbath healing. Okay, so we're putting our finger on an issue here. What's happening is that you have excitement about Jesus, and people are recognizing God is doing something in this moment. And they are right. But what Jesus is also pointing at is that so many people are excited, but it calls for a response. And lots of people are just letting it go by, and they're not responding in this critical moment. In a lot of ways, what we're talking about today has to do with what is our response to Jesus and what Jesus is about. Imagine something. Imagine news about this healing of the disabled woman on the Sabbath. The news about it is filtering out to different places. People are hearing about it. They're discussing it, debating it. And in one town, you have rabbis and leading citizens who are talking, and they're asking the question, was it okay for Jesus to heal on the Sabbath? And one rabbi says, no, wrong is wrong. No debate. It's work on the Sabbath. Enough with, well, yeah, maybe this, maybe that. No, black and white, wrong. Now hold up, someone else says. Let's be clear about something. It's not like there's a commandment in the law of Moses that says healing on the Sabbath is wrong. We need to at least be honest to admit that this is a matter of tradition and how we interpret the law. But I am saying Jesus was wrong. That he's ignoring a whole tradition that is there for a good purpose. Because we look at our history and it's ugly in a lot of places. That there are so many times where people turned away from God and away from his commandments. Eventually, people ended up booted out of their own country in exile, in captivity in Babylon. And we do not want that to ever happen again. And so we guard the Sabbath zealously. That's why Jesus was wrong. Another person chimes in. I see it like this. You know, that people today, they're morally lax. And they may say, well, it's not going to hurt if I just do this little thing. But what they're doing is they're kind of taking one small step closer to the edge of the cliff. And so you keep on doing that. And what eventually happens is you take one more just tiny step and it seems small and insignificant and you're over the edge, plunging down into the abyss. And what Jesus has done with this healing on the Sabbath is he's taken us one tiny step closer to the edge. Another person says, actually, I disagree with all of you. I think it's fine for Jesus to heal on the Sabbath. Now, don't get on my case because I've got another issue here. Because there's something else that bugs me. Jesus often is like deliberately provocative. Like there are a lot of situations where he's just like looking for an argument. He wants a fight. And when somebody's like that so often, I ask the question, will God bless that ministry? Will God bring fruit out of a ministry that so often is looking for conflict? I don't think so. And the conversation goes on. And there have been many churches where such conversations took place. But did you notice something about the conversation? Something was missing in all the discussion. No one mentioned the woman who was healed. What about the woman who for 18 years was so crippled up that she couldn't stand up straight? It's easy enough to say, well, hold it, you know, no one is more important than God's law. Fine, actually, that's a great principle. We should pay attention to that. But you do have to interpret the law. The law says don't work on the Sabbath, and so Jews did have to make decisions. What is work? What is not work? But can't we look at the woman and think that maybe her situation helps us interpret the law? And if we're going to interpret the law, that it is a quest to understand what God cares about, his very heart. And if we pay attention to the woman, it may help us to understand God's heart. See, the danger is people could actually treat the woman like she's the rude tourist at the Grand Canyon who gets in the way and blocks our view of this beautiful act of nature. And so we say, this woman's getting in the way. We can't see God. Maybe if we look at the woman, it helps us see God more clearly. So you see the scene, the synagogue leader and his allies, Jesus, the woman. And Jesus calls a woman over to him, and she goes to him. The synagogue leader thinks, oh no, what's about to happen here? She's standing in front of Jesus, and what she needs so badly is for Jesus to put out his hands and to touch her and to speak words over her. She needs to be healed. Now, notice something in your Bibles. In verse 11 and verse 12, there's a word that appears in both verses, but a lot of English translations don't translate it the same way. I really wish that English translations would strive for consistency. However, that is more difficult than you might imagine sometimes. My version says, verse 11, there was a woman who had had a disabling spirit for 18 years. And then verse 12, Jesus says to her, woman, you are freed from your disability. And that's actually the same word. It's a noun in both verses. Noun meaning illness or disability. But it's also kind of an ambiguous word. It's one that can kind of bleed over into other meanings, just like generally weakness. In fact, in some other places in the New Testament, it's a word that is used positively in kind of an ironic way, so that our weakness positively points to God's power. Two things about healing in Jesus' ministry. Number one, Jesus wants to relieve people of physical issues that don't let them live life in its fullness. He cares about illness. He cares about disease and deafness and people not being able to speak and blindness. He cares about them as physical problems. But number two, what's very evident all across the Gospels is that things like disability and blindness and illness, that they represent other things as well. They represent spiritual disability, spiritual blindness, spiritual illness. The world is a spiritually sick place. People are spiritually disabled because of sin. And so the woman's crippled state is a reminder of this damaged world that we live in. There is a remedy for the basic problem in the story, where the synagogue leader and others are indignant because Jesus has done this healing. There is a remedy for that. They can look at the woman, and each one can realize, that's me. I'm her. I'm disabled because of sin. And as long as the synagogue leader thinks that he is well, and as long as others look at the woman and see that she's got a problem, boy, that'd be tough to live with, but I'm glad I don't have a problem. As long as they can separate themselves from her, they will never understand what this scene is really about. It's true of us as well. We serve a Messiah who cares about our physical issues. Let the church pray for healing. Let Christians plead on behalf of others who are sick or disabled in some way. But we all come to Jesus as that hunched over woman. We are people who know what it means to be spiritually disabled. Susan Phillips is a spiritual director who tells a story about a man named Grant who came to her years before. And Grant was a Christian man. He was a leader in business, well-regarded, earned a lot of respect, good family man, regular church attender. And Grant comes to her and talks to her, and what becomes evident is that something's missing. You know, he's looking for something, and it's not even so much what Grant says as what he doesn't say. And so they spend a lot of time with Grant just talking and talking and opening up his life. And Susan Phillips says, there's one moment that ends up being this critical piece in Grant's journey. That one day he talks about the death of his brother, and it was a suicide. And as he looks back to that, he just feels such pain because he looks at it and says, I could have done more for him. There are other things where I could have been involved in his life in other ways. And it's just evident he carries such scars from this painful experience. But, she says, that little moment, just opening up that little bit, and soon we're starting to see change in Grant's life, you know, that he begins to find more of what he's really looking for, which is really deeper relationship with God. And I hear stories like Grant's. And I talk to people in our church. It comes up in many places and many situations, and it comes up in my life. Not always, but so often, the road to wholeness and healing means that we are going to face our pain and the crippled places in our lives. Fixing our beliefs and our doctrine, that's not enough. We need to see ourselves. We need Jesus to put his hands on us. We need healing. In fact, this story rolls right out of what came before it, so that if you go back to the start of chapter 13, people come to Jesus and they have this question. They're asking him about this situation where some Galileans had been put to death by the Roman governor Pilate. And it was in a very gruesome way. And so they ask Jesus, you know, what's your opinion about it? But what you get from Jesus' response is they were asking about it in a very certain way. They were asking, what was the matter with those people that such a terrible thing would happen to them? And Jesus says, no way. No, it's not about them. It's about you. Look at yourself. Repent. Turn from the way that you are going. And so many stories in the Gospels, they emphasize this all kinds of ways, but they say again and again, Jesus telling us, you need healing. You need to be healed. Along the way in this series, We've been saying that Jesus is forming people around him, that he's forming a community as he walks on the road. And so some of the things that he's doing, many of the things, they're telling his followers in the future, who will they be as a community together? And Jesus really isn't concerned with a community that's about just getting its religion straight. He's not really interested in that. One thing the church is to be is a community of healing. And as a congregation, it's one of the questions that we just have to come back to again and again, where we stop and we ask, are we a community of healing? Are we a community in which people can be healed? Are we sources of healing for each other? There's a knee-jerk way of answering this, you know, where we say, yes, yeah, we can do that. Yeah, we can suck it up. And yeah, absolutely, we want to be a community of healing. But it doesn't really start like that. It starts with each of us recognizing that we are that woman standing before Jesus, just wanting his hands to touch us so that we can be healed. Sometimes Christians get bothered by talk like this. Because they will say, yeah, but we are healed people. And when Jesus has come into our lives, we are healed of what was wrong with us. And yeah, in a sense, true, definitely true. It's just a little more complicated than that. Because we still know ourselves. We still know our struggles. We still know our woundedness. We still know that we have the effects of sin in our lives. We experience the damage. But the good news is that Christ continues to offer us healing. There was a book last year that made such an impression on me. I've cited it before in a sermon. And it's an older book by Larry Crabb from 20, 25 years ago, a book about spiritual community. He goes to deep issues in that book and is very open about himself. One of the experiences he shares of himself is about a time where he's going to teach this one Sunday morning class at his church. And so as he's thinking about the topic and what he's going to do, he knows that if he's going to address it authentically, he's going to have to be open with himself. And he's going to have to share his real struggles, his real issues. And so he thinks about that, okay, I'm going to do that. But as the time gets closer, as he gets closer to Sunday, he starts to become terrified. And he said that the biggest thing, the thing that frightened him the most was the idea that after he is done on that Sunday, that someone might come up to him afterwards and say, if you just do X, you'll be fine. And as vulnerable as he knows he's going to be, he's not going to be able to take that. That's just too scary to think about. That somebody could be so flippant with these deep things that he's wrestling with. So he comes to Sunday, and he does what he had planned to do. And something happens. People communicate back to him, this is good. This, what you're talking about, this is important. This is something that we as a church need to be talking about. It matters to us. And so afterwards, people are supportive of him. No one is flippant with him. And what he recognizes is, you know, it's not like this huge earth-shaking moment where the church is completely changed forever after, but it's a significant moment. Something happened there. And it's a catalyst for the possibilities of other things in the future that can happen. What is it that we offer each other? What do we offer? We offer each other ourselves as people standing before Jesus, wanting to be healed, wanting his hands to touch us and to pronounce upon us healing. I want to leave you with two questions to take away and think about. One question has to do with how we share Jesus Christ with others. That when we share Jesus, one of the things that we can do is we can tell our story. And so if you were telling your story to others, in your story, what would you say? Where have you been healed? What have you been healed from? So that's question number one. Question number two is, right now, what do you need to be healed from? Where does healing need to happen in your life? So what have you been healed from? What do you need to be healed from? I'm going to ask elders and their wives and Carrie to go back to the foyer, and we'll just, when Chuck leads us in our next song, then we'll just invite people who want to go back to the foyer for prayer. And whatever the need might be, whatever you have on your heart, just go back there and seek prayer. But specific with what we've been talking about today, if you need physical healing for something, go back and seek prayer for that. And if you want to pray for healing on behalf of someone else, go back and we'll pray for you with that. If there is spiritual healing for you or for someone else, pray for that as well. So you can go back there as we sing, and we'll stand and sing right now as Chuck leads us.